Hello, I'm Moncon McGann, and you're very welcome to the Big Adventure Podcast.
This week, we're looking at families who dare to set off into the unknown. Brazen parents who pack up their broods and go wandering the world. Via the magic of an ISDN line, and in fact, the only way we could get in contact with her, is Geraldine Osborne. She's on the line from Nunavut. Are you there, Geraldine? And if so, can you tell me where in the world is Nunavut?
Yeah, hi. Nunavut is actually the newest territory in Canada. It's the northeast of the Canadian landmass, and in fact, Nunavut comprises one-fifth of the total landmass of Canada. So it's pretty huge, but it has a tiny population. So, yeah, it's a very exciting and wonderful place.
And where are you literally? Are you out in tundra? Are you in a village? Are you in a town? What is there?
Well, at the moment I'm living in Iqaluit, and Iqaluit is the capital, it's the metropolis, it's a big community by Arctic standards. It's a population of about 6,000, which is quite large, because most of the communities are tiny, less than 1,000 people, and some of them even, you know, less than 100.
So is it freezing? Are there storms? Can you paint me a picture of exactly where you are? What's happening?
Yeah, well, at the moment today it's minus 33 outside. It's a beautiful day. It's beautiful and clear. There's a bit of a wind, so it's actually in the minus 40s with the wind chill. And it's a perfect Arctic day. I like these very clear days when the sky is blue and the snow is really white. It's a bit like, you know, when you're on an aeroplane and you've gone up through the clouds and you see this blue, blue sky and that white snow, and it's calm and beautiful, and that's what it's like here at the moment. So, and another really nice, interesting thing about these very clear skies is we had a wonderful view of this fantastic comet last night, which is great. And of course, you get very used to the northern lights because they're spectacular, but you know, I've seen so many now. I just say, oh yeah, there's the Northern Lights. You know,
it sounds like paradise.
A regular occurrence.
Also with me in studio, safely nestled here in Limerick, is Christine Breen, who wrote So Many Miles to Paradise about bringing her two children and her husband on a round the world journey. Christine, you had a kind of shorter journey to get here today.
Yes, it only took me an hour to get here.
You're from Clare, although you don't exactly sound like that.
I'm from Clare, but I was born in New York.
Okay, and your journey brought you and your children and your husband from Clare basically all around the world and back again.
That's right. It took us 9 months and we travelled around the world.
What was the idea behind it and where did you pick? You had literally anywhere you wanted to go, you could have gone.
Well, we started off in America, me being an American, and kids hadn't been to the whole of America. It's a big country. So we went to America first, then down to Costa Rica, Bolivia, Peru, Chile, across to New Zealand and Australia. We were meant to go for a month's trip to China, but just as SARS broke out on the last day, we had to cancel our trip. And we went to Bali, Singapore, Malaysia.
What's amazing, I mean, you went to some incredibly far out places in Chile, Bali, Malaysia. But, I mean, your account in your book, you give an account of the Yellowstone National Park. And you show that through the eyes of an 8-year-old. Your son, Joseph, was 8 at the time. Was
11.
He? 11, sorry, 11 at the time. And he's seeing these, he's seeing bears, he's seeing geysers, he's seeing mud pools. And these are as exciting to him as, you know, the very far reaches of the Altiplano in Peru or something like that. So when you're bringing children, in fact, they have a completely different perspective on the world.
Oh, they do. And Deirdre was interested in the shops, naturally. She's a teenager of 15, where she was going to get the next vegetarian meal. That was top on her priority. And Joseph was interested in things like the mud pools, you know, because they were beautiful. If you've ever seen a mud pool,
no,
the
never
colors have in them, they're gorgeous. Wow. But he was a bit afraid of the bears, I have to say. We were all a bit afraid of bears. We took a trek one time out about 2 miles, and it got quieter and quieter, and we were convinced that there were bears there, so we kind of tiptoed back out, and we put a little sign inside the box, because you have a box, because you're supposed to help them keep track of sounds of wolves and things like that. Yeah. And we said, afraid of bear, turned back. The Breen Williams family.
Geraldine, you've travelled a few times, sometimes with your children and sometimes without them. Can you tell me, the biggest journey was it Ellesmere Island?
Well, yeah, the first time we brought all the children with us on a journey was a trip to Ellesmere Island, which is the farthest north. We went to a community called Grease Fjord, and it's the northernmost community in Canada. It's a tiny community of 86 people at the time, and it's a very exciting place. Our plan at the time was we also had a dog team. I had three tiny children, and we had dogs, 11 dogs, and our plan was to travel across the sea ice to Greenland. At that part, Ellesmere Island is quite close to the western side of Greenland, so just traveling across the sea ice, you can reach Greenland.
And how did the journey go? Was it a success?
Well, we didn't do what we'd planned to do, but it was very successful in the sense that we did lots of journeys with the kids, and we had lots of fun with the dog team. There were dangers for sure, and you had to anticipate those and plan. So obviously we had to have guns for polar bears, and we had a radio as well, which was essential, absolutely essential. And probably we wouldn't have bothered with the radio if we didn't have the children, but absolutely. So if we got into any trouble, we could radio for help. And there's obviously the challenges of crossing. You know, you're crossing ice on top of a sea, and the conditions can vary. And, of course, the weather conditions. A storm can come just out of nowhere in a very short time. So you have to be self-sufficient. You have to have everything you need for, you know, the length of the journey. It needs meticulous planning, and we had done all that, so we felt pretty good that we'd covered a lot of the risks. I mean, you'd have to, otherwise you just wouldn't do it.
It's just struck me, there's a connection between you and my guest and Christine back here in Limerick, in that your husband is the sculptor Danny Osborne, who even people would know him from that famous sculpture of Oscar Wilde in Merrion Square, with all the colourful stones, mm-hmm. whereas Christine Breen's husband is the novelist Niall Williams. So I don't know, is it this creative urge of the men that is driving you? Was Danny a reason that you found yourself in the Arctic, Geraldine?
Yeah, I think so, yes, because Danny had been here before. When I met Danny, he had actually been here on two occasions. Danny had first come to the Arctic in 1977, I think it was, to paint. He went to Kikitarjoak Island and painted for 3 months. And then he also, with two other colleagues, did an expedition on Ellesmere Island. So this was in 1981, so he's quite smitten with the Arctic, and he just uses the Arctic.
I presume, Christine, the idea of Niall being a novelist, basically he could work anywhere in the world. So
he could work anywhere in the world, but the thing is, I think I dragged him. But
novelists just want to sit in their ivories and type.
But I think the first short story he wrote when we got back was called The Bolivian Fable. And I think this trip and his new novel that's coming out, it's A Boy Travels.
So it's still in there.
It has made a big difference in his life.
There was a moment you went to a place that is really close to my heart. This is the island of Lake Titicaca in Bolivia.
Did you go to the Island of the Sun?
I did.
Wow.
Incredible.
Did you get one of these initiations with some kind of a priest?
I didn't. Look, I don't know how that would have done at the time. Oh. But again, your account of bringing children out on a boat on that lake, that would seem frightening.
It was frightening. I think that was the one time where we really looked at ourselves and I thought, what have we done? We're crazy. Are we going to get out of this alive?
Why? What happened?
Well, we arrived by catamaran onto one of the side of one of the island of the sun, in a catamaran that had actually berths for 60 people, and there were like four or five of us, maybe as many as six or seven of us on the whole place. Mm-hmm. So we arrive and suddenly we're on this island. It was as if we came into a Fellini film. There was music and musicians who couldn't play anything. They're the most outrageous music. They were half drunk and they were going around in a circle with their long skirts and their bowler hats, and it was some festival for a saint. And wild pigs running through the street. Okay. Yeah. So, but for some reason, they took us through this half-built town and then put us into a rowboat. And suddenly this man appeared, and he was one of the musicians. And he was a bit drunk, and he got in and he started rowing us. But he didn't know how to row. So we're halfway across Lake Titicaca to go somewhere, and I'm seeing that we're about to crash into the rocks, and I'm trying to pick up my Spanish and say, hello. Do you know?
Because there are quite some currents. I mean, the waves on that island. Yeah,
there are waves on Lake Titicaca, and the storm was starting to come in. We were very, very scared.
So I seem to be focusing you on all the times where you put your children in the most peril.
Yes.
But in some way, that's the most exciting thing for the reader, for the person hearing the stories later. At the time, what did the children make of this?
Well, Deirdre and Niall were facing me, so they couldn't see that we were about to crash. Joseph was sitting with me, and he could see that we were about to crash. So he was petrified, and when we got onto the finally arrived, he was furious. He was cursing everybody that he could find to say, "What? What is the meaning of taking me on this unsafe journey?"
Yeah, how dare you do this?
Yes,
but that is fascinating. So suddenly, one is taking one's children out of their safety realm, and often you think you're giving them an experience of a lifetime, an adventure, but sometimes they won't thank you for it.
Oh, but he'll never forget it.
Right.
None of us will forget the Island of the Sun. It was really straight out of a surreal movie or something.
Okay.
And it was very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, maybe the Peruvian gods and everything were at play as well, but we'll never forget it. We had some remarkable experiences. I think going to Patagonia with the children was probably the most precious and treasured place, because if you've been there before, haven't you?
No, never Patagonia.
Oh, because it's so massive in the first place, mm-hmm. and so beautiful and so protected,
mm-hmm.
and very few people actually get down there. And we hit it during the really good weather, so it just was extraordinary.
Right.
And to see the Torres del Paine, the actual picture that you see, if you've seen the pictures of Patagonia,
yes,
to actually see them right from where you're staying, and nothing else, no pylons, you know, nothing like that. It was, and the icebergs, and oh, it was fabulous.
The experiences were so intense that they were literally burned into you, into your mind.
Yeah, even the ordinary ones, because you're living outside of your comfort zone for 9 months, and you're not in one place. So for 9 months, everything is alive, the sounds, the smells, the travel experiences, everything is...
Christine, talk to me about the practical elements of doing these journeys. In some ways, you're taking your children out of school. Is that legal even, or how does one get around that?
Well, if I don't know, we got away with it anyway.
Yeah.
Well, Joseph was in 6 years, so we were able to take him out because he was in a small rural school.
He was 11 at the time. Yeah, basically, you're giving them a true education in some ways. You're not denying them an education.
Oh,
you're actually just increasing
yes,
it.
I think adventure and travel open the minds and the spirits of children, and you're giving them a gift forever. You know, and who knows how many, you know, how long it will take for this to really play out for them. But I think it was a really special thing to give them, and what they gave us in return.
Mm-hmm. Which was what?
Well, the respect that they gave us and the intimacy they shared with them, you know, all of us, as the four of us, because we had to live, you know, there was like a little bubble of us that we took to Peru and Bolivia and so forth. And it allowed the children to see us more as people and less as parents. And I think that's really, really important, because they can be more forgiving at the end of the day, and they're more understanding that you're actually a person.
Yeah.
First, a parent second, you know, same as the children are people first, you know, then they're your children, your whatever, you know.
It's fascinating when in a society where people are saying that the family has become atomized and is broken up and is not communicating, the idea of this thing of taking a family on an adventure around the world is the exact opposite. Basically, you're putting the four of them into a life raft and hoping they survive. But I presume, you know, there can be, in some ways, that can knit together and create something wonderful. The opposite can also be the case.
Yeah, but in a family, you know, if that does happen, then you got to sit down and look at that and come home and get a family therapist or something. But I remember telling my sister when we were going to do this trip, and she said, I couldn't be with my kids for that length of time. Do you know, a lot of people would feel that way, you know, but I don't know, it was really wonderful for us.
Yeah, actually, I was going to say I had a slightly different experience, because my kids were, you know, I had three, and they were very young. The eldest was 4, 2, and 1 year old. In fact, Oisín had its first birthday, the youngest, when we arrived up here in the High Arctic. And because they were so young, they accepted it all as normal. You know, it was good in one way, because the food was very different. You know, they were eating seal meat and whale skin called muktuk and walrus, and they accepted all that as quite normal. But it's funny, because you mentioned about, you know, the intensity of being together, and I found that very hard, particularly in the dark winter, because at that latitude, it's dark for 3 months of the winter. It's pitch black dark. And I really did, there were times that I really did miss the support of my family, you know, to help me with the kids, because it was very intense being inside and, not having your extended family to deal with three kids. I found it very hard to be, and that was something that I learned about myself, because I thought at first, am I a bad mother that I can't be with my children 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? And of course, the other thing too about living in the far north is that with the 24-hour darkness and 3 months of darkness, is that the routine, your 24-hour routine just goes, because you're not tied to your 24-hour clock anymore. And even though I like to say, you know, it's great to travel and get away from routine, you realize how nice and comforting routine can be as well, because the kids were sleeping at all different hours, because one would sleep in the night and the other would sleep during the day, and so it was quite intense.
Can you tell me why were you there? Why had you decided to go up to the Arctic Circle to bring a family there?
Well, I've always been interested in travel, and traveling to places that few people have been to is very exciting. And one of the things that are really interested me in going there is, well, I had no mental picture of what it would be like. You know, when you say you're going to travel to South America or Australia, that you have some idea from TV or that, and you have an expectation, and you think it'll probably be like this, or it may not be, but you have some mental picture. But I couldn't imagine what it would be like. I couldn't imagine what it would be like to experience minus 30, minus 50, or even, you know, 6 or 3 months of darkness and 3 months of continuous daylight, and that I found very exciting. And the other thing, of course, is that my husband Danny had been to the Canadian Arctic before. He's particularly interested in painting Canadian landscapes and or the Arctic landscape, and so he was very, very keen, and not just for painting, he just loves the whole outdoor, the big wide expanse of landscape here.
I thought I was open to the world, Geraldine, but hearing your account makes me realise how close-minded I am. In some ways, it sounds it sounds pretty grim. It sounds, I mean, it's cold. The benefits, what you're saying, are the views. It's that pristine emptiness.
Yeah, it's not just that. I mean, the winter is very cold, and the winter is hard. It is very hard. But then the spring is just magnificent, and you know when it warms up, and you can just, you know, pack up your tent and all your camping gear and go out on the land, as they say, go out with your dog team, and you're free, and you make camp wherever you want, you travel for as long as you want, particularly when there's continuous daylight, because you don't have to stick to your 24-hour routine, so you might travel for 36 hours, some, you know, you might have a 36-hour day, and it really does stretch you and challenge you to realize how confined we are.
You're already convincing me.
Take a lot of things for granted.
Yeah, that does sound rather magical. As far as I can see now, the first journey, as you said, you brought your children way up to the very high latitudes. I mean, as I was saying, Ellesmere Island, the only way I was able to see it was by looking at basically a map of the North Pole. But you're now somewhere further down, a bit lower, still in the Arctic region, with your children. They've grown up a little bit now. What are they doing now, and what do they think of their life there?
Yeah, certainly at different ages they have different responses to, you know, different environments. And as I say, when they're very small, all they want is their security of their parents, and they'll accept anything. But then when they get a bit older and they get friends and they get settled into their ways of life, you know, they are disrupted a little bit by, you know, moving away. But at the same time, and it depends on their personality. They all have different personalities. Some of my children absolutely adored it. My daughter Orla loved every minute of new experiences. But then, you know, another child might feel a bit more secure at home and complain. And they, you know, teenagers in particular are not slow to complain when they don't like the food, or they don't like this, or they don't like that. But in the end, it really is a wonderful education for them, because they'll always reminisce about it later and say, you know, wasn't it great when we did this, or when we went out camping, and when we camped on this island, or, you know, they will reminisce about it. I think it will really, you know, at the time they might give you a hard time because you're not doing things that normal parents do, but I think later they appreciate it.
You're listening to The Big Adventure with me, Moncon McGann, in studio here in Limerick. With me is Christine Breen, and live from way over the other side of the world in Nunavut is Geraldine Osborne, both mothers who brought their young children on incredible journeys. Christine, it is that balance between the payoffs, I mean, for the children, but also for the parents. What are they getting at? Is it overall a good thing, or are there some terrible moments for the parents too when they're doubting everything?
I can't say that there were really any downsides to it. It would be...
Is this because of looking back years
even,
later?
Or? Even living it, it was just such an adventure all the time. I mean, you take into account there are going to be some bad days, but every day there's a new horizon. We learned a lot about ourselves. I mean, you learn a lot about each other when you're just the four of you for such a long time together, and you have no extended family, and you don't speak the language in a lot of the places that you are. But you learn a lot about yourselves, and personally, it's a learning curve.
So, Geraldine, we were looking at the elements of both the dangers one puts one's children through, but also the great benefits. What are those benefits that you can see in your own children from having made these journeys?
Well, it's expanded their minds. They can see that there's a world out there that's, you know, much, much bigger. And I think that's particularly important when you grow up in rural Ireland, just to be exposed to that bigger, wider world out there. And also it's made them quite independent and resourceful. It's hard to know. I mean, in many ways, maybe they still would be like that. Maybe that's partly personality, but certainly it's expanded their experiences. And another thing I've noticed, which was quite curious, surprised me, was particularly as teenagers, I think, travelling, it made them very proud of their nationality. They suddenly realised, oh, I'm Irish, you know, I'm different to everyone else. And it's good to be Irish because people usually respond very well to Irish people. So it was quite interesting.
It's interesting that of how people in Ireland relate to you when you come back. I mean, sometimes travellers, they come back to Ireland and they find people aren't that interested. Christine, how were you when you and your children had got back, obviously bubbling with stories about the world? Were people open to that?
I think they were open to it, of course, but they were. There was nothing relative for them it didn't slot in anywhere, because most people go, say, for a 2-week holiday to Spain, or although now more and more people are travelling further afield. So they just were. We were there. So how'd you get on? Great. Good. Glad you're back. What was your favorite place? New Zealand. Oh, good. Great. I hear that's very nice. Do you know that kind of? You know, they were glad to have us back, but I don't think they could. Well, you can't, unless you've taken a similar journey. You just can't appreciate it, and you can't really expect other people to appreciate it. But
Geraldine, do you find that when you get back to West Cork, do people have a consciousness of what you do?
No. They're pleased, as you mentioned, they're pleased to see you back and back safe and sound, but it's sort of beyond their comprehension why, you know, that this part of the world, they say, oh, you know, you've been up to the North Pole, and of course they still think people live in igloos here, and as you mentioned, Christine, they just have nothing to relate it to, and that's fine. You know, I mean, I don't mind that at all. If somebody is interested, I'm really willing to talk about it. But it's quite true that they just have no reference. A lot of people just.
So, is there
have
a case
no
then?
Like.
Is there a case, Geraldine, when one does bring your children on these on experiences of a lifetime? And then they come back to their community and find that they're actually alienated. I don't know, did your children actually fit back into the Irish school system? I know Christine's did. And they find that, you know, perhaps they're feeling isolated. Was that a case for your children, Geraldine?
Yes. Yeah, I did have an experience like that. I was working here, and I left from 2001, and I left then in 2003 for, you know, family reasons. My sister had a terminal illness and various things like that, and so we moved back to Ireland, and my daughter Orla, who was then in transition year, just did not adapt to being back again in the Irish educational system, and hated it, and decided, she rang up a friend here in the Calvert one day, and she was moaning to me, and I was saying, oh yes, you know, the way you do, put it off, and she rang up her friend in the Calvert and said, I want to move back, can I come and live with you? And her friend said yes, and So she did. She moved back here herself.
Geraldine, if people are thinking of doing this, of you know, cashing in their nest egg and bringing their children on an experience of a lifetime, opening up their eyes to a whole new way of education, what sort of advice would you have for them?
I think you need to prepare very well. Well, and it may be, we always, you know, put a lot of work into preparing for our trips, you know, looking at all the options and making decisions based on a lot of research. I think that, but partly because a lot of the places we go to require that because we had to survive ourselves. You know, it may not be the case if you're going, staying in hotels or traveling that are places that are, you know, not quite off the beaten track. But I think it's a wonderful experience, but it's not everybody's cup of tea. And some people, you know, I don't think you actually have to go to exotic places to experience the joys of traveling. You know, you can go to wonderful places in Ireland too that are just so fantastic. But for some people, it's, for me personally, you know, I like to go to places that are uninhabited. I like to go to parts of this wonderful earth that we live on, this globe that's shrinking and all the time, and see the world. But I mean, I agree, it's not everybody's cup of tea. And I think if somebody is thinking of it, they have to really be quite passionate about their desire to travel.
Christine, have you any advice? You've done a lot of thought about this, the best way of bringing a family abroad.
I think Geraldine's right. You really do have to do a lot of research. Well, that's what worked for us. I did almost a year's preparation of research, where we were going to go, how it was going to work with our itinerary, where we were going to stay, the balance of where we'd rent a house, where we would do the hostel thing, although, frankly, we didn't do too much of that. But, you know, all that, that takes a lot of research. So at least you have some kind of structure. You know, you're leaving your own structure of your life, but you have some structure to fit into. And but I would encourage everyone to go for it. The education thing, when they're younger, you can do it quite easily. I think you can do some homeschooling on the road. And transition year is the perfect time to take your teenager out. You know, and I think it's an invaluable experience. I know for Deirdre, it has made all the difference for her in what she's doing now. And Joseph, likewise, I'm sure it's going to be very important for him in the future.
Geraldine, thank you so much for talking to me from Nunavut.
Thanks for listening to the Big Adventure podcast, a Mixed Bag Media production for RTE.